Good morning to each one. We also greet each one in Christ's name this morning. I was also blessed in being here and the devotional, how that, you know, as big as God is and as small as we are, the interest that he takes about us. He knows everything about us. There's nothing that is hid from him. And so I was blessed with that, and also how that the Sunday school ties in with what I have chosen to speak about this morning. And it has to do with idolatry. How many of us have a problem, struggle with idols in our own life? How many of you bowed down this morning to a cow or a calf and worshiped it before coming to church this morning? And I trust no hands would go up, right? We know they did that back in the day, but we have moved on. We don't do that anymore, right? We have no problems with idols, do we? The second, make sure I click the right one here. The first of the commandments is, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And a poll that was done in America, 76% of Americans polled thought that they were guiltless in this area. You know, they could look at the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me, and they would have considered themselves free from that commandment. They didn't feel like they had a problem. They were doing a pretty good job. And I wondered how that pool would play out with us this morning. Do we have other gods in front of God Almighty, or in front of Jehovah God, if you will? You know, there are still places that you can go to in India. You have the Buddhist God. There are still places where people literally fall down and worship those gods. But probably none of us here this morning has gone to that extent in worshiping idols. And so we don't worship this kind of cow, do we? We don't worship that calf. What about the one on the right? Now that's a bull, if you will, and that represents Wall Street, or which is our financial system. So anything to do with money, that's what it represents. But what I would like to focus on is this cow right here. Is there anything on there that has become an idol to us? In Matthew 22:37-38, it says, "Ye shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment." So with everything, God is first and foremost. In a nutshell, God is first and foremost. And then your neighbor as yourself. I have read that verse many times already. And so the question is, where is God on this scale? In 1 John 5:21, the last verse, it says, "Little children, keep yourselves from idols. Do I worship additional gods, or is he always and in every case the supreme ruler who rules, who receives my undivided passion and devotion?" Where are we this morning? We can see here, based on this cow, that idols, idolatry is more than Buddhist temples of bowing down before a literal statue, if you will, and worshiping it. If, as you look at that cow, the things that you see on the surface, none of those things in and of themselves may be anything wrong with, right? We have family. We love our family. And there's some of those things that would have different levels. We have career. You know, we value a lot of those things. Our culture. We want to be successful. We enjoy our comfort. All of those things, we probably have something to do with a lot of those things. But the problem is when any one of those things creeps up the ladder and takes the place of God, then we've got a problem, right? We have an idol that has come in and taken over. The problem for many of us is some of those things have become idols in our own life, and so we focus on the things that you see on the outside, right? You know, maybe we have a problem with money, pleasure, or we want fame or success or our careers. But many times we need to look deeper. We need to look inside of that cow and see what is driving it, because many times there is pain, there's hurts, and things like that inside that have not been properly dealt with. And now you have those things that show themselves on the surface. I was at the LLP seminar, and it was revealed to me there that there were idols in my own life that I had to go in and look at, things that I had to renounce. There was interest that I had that I was putting in front of family, my wife, children, and things like that. And we need to renounce those things and bring them to the foot of the cross. And so the question becomes, as we look at that, how do we know whether something is an idol or not? How do we know? How do we know we have those things in its proper perspective? One thing that we can know is if any of those things is putting a strain on your relationship with your wife or husband or your family or your neighbor or whatever. We need to check ourselves because ultimately it is also going to put a strain on our relationship with God. And so that is one benchmark that you can look at, is look at any one of those things, whether it's our career, our farm, our business. If any of those things would be taken away from you, what would happen in your life at that point? How would you deal with those things? A lot of those things we have to hold loosely in our hand. Things can happen in a moment, and how do we respond at that point? Someone said, I heard recently an expression that said, "Hurts buried alive stay alive." And so a lot of times in our past, there can be hurts, things or whatever, and we bury them. We don't properly deal with them. But they're going to stay in there, and they're going to stay alive in there. And at some point, they come out on the surface, and you'll see that in that cow right there. What has become an idol to us? I heard recently an expression. Today, as Sundays, someone referred to as a toilet bowl. Most people refer to it as a Super Bowl Sunday. And it's probably the most watched sporting event of the year, right? I mean, everybody talks about it. You know, people have their favorite teams that they want to win, right? Now, I want to be clear. Just because someone watches a game doesn't mean that sports has become his idol, right? I don't want to get into intellectual dishonesty. But we do know that sports has become a god to a lot of people, right? I don't think there's any dispute there. It is idolized by a lot of people. And I can understand, you know, a lot of times a team is represented by the state or the city that it's from, right? And so we want to root for that team. You know, if Tennessee or whoever that team is, we tend to root for that, right? Because we're a part of the state. And so that team represents something that we're a part of, right? So we can get into that spirit. We want our team to win. The same thing can go into politics. You know, when a person of authority is in office, or when the president espouses something that we value, when he promotes something of a value system that we share, you know, we are, yes, we can easily get behind a person like that who shares our value system, right? Politics can work the same way. You know, the Olympics are going to be held here in another, I'm not sure, a couple weeks, a month, or whatever it is. But a lot of people in America are going to be rooting for America, right? We want Americans to win the most medals, to bring home the most golds. And so people in America are going to be rooting for the country. I can understand all of that. Because I'm also a part of a heavenly country. We are ambassadors for Christ. And so I can understand the passion that's behind a lot of the winning down here. But when we're a part of the heavenly country, we're ambassadors for Christ. And once we start winning medals in heaven, right? When we start laying up treasures up there, the medals down here pale in comparison. It's just, it doesn't compare. And so at that point, do things down here really matter? You know, who won the Super Bowl 11 years ago? Can anyone tell me? Even 6 years ago or 4 years ago? The reality is, it doesn't really matter, right? And so, but what does matter is what treasure are we building in heaven? What are we accumulating in heaven? You know, I understand the interest in watching some of those things. The reason I understand is because I understand the thrill that comes when treasures are accumulated up yonder. And so where is God in your chain of life? If God is up here, where do all these other things fall? I found out in my own life, when we knock down these idols, the things of this earth grow strangely dim. As the song says, in the light of his glory and grace. And so the things that were once very important to me, when we get rid of those, when our spirit comes in alignment with God's spirit, okay, the things that were once very important to you, whatever it is on that cow. And I understand there's some things, family, for example, you cannot even compare that with, say, money or whatever. It's not even in the same equation. But whatever those things are, you know, whether it's your culture, your career, your dress as Mennonites or Amish or whatever, those things lose their value when we operate in the heavenly realm, okay? And so we need to check ourselves if any of those things has an extremely high priority in your life. We need to check ourselves, where are we in light of what is important to God? Because as I brought those things to the foot of the cross, you can find freedom. And so I think what we need to do this morning is, as we look at that cow, we need to take all those things, whatever those things are, whatever those things that drives you, the things that causes you to get up in the morning, if any one of those things is causing a relationship strain with your wife or your husband or your family, in any way, we need to make sure that that is brought to the foot of the cross and surrendered. Because those things can be an idol. And if we have idols, you know, more than likely there is something in your past, a hurt, pain, or whatever, that has not been properly taken care of, and then it comes out and it manifests itself. Okay, in this is actually just sort of a preview here. I would like to look at someone in the Old Testament that had a problem with idols. It's one of the first times that we hear about idols in the Old Testament, and it has to do with a woman. I don't necessarily want to pick on ladies this morning. Men have just as much, probably even more of a problem with idols, perhaps, than ladies do. But the name of this lady was Rachel. And again, nothing about anyone here with that name either. But Rachel is an interesting character that I would like to look at this morning. And a lot of this has to do with a book that I've read. It's been already some time ago. But some of the things that I'll be sharing is what I've read in there as well. But Rachel is a woman that also struggled with idolatry, right? I mean, she stole her father's idols. You know, and like us, and like her, we all struggle with putting our hope and trust in something, someone, anything other than the true God. We find ourselves weak, afraid, fretting, or angry, bitter, and complaining. And in the midst of this struggle, God is calling us. He's bringing illumination. He wants to liberate us. And so as we look at Rachel, what made her steal her father's idols? What made her do that? You know, Rachel, I'm sure, loved her husband. She enjoyed the blessing of living near her parents. You know, she grew up there and she got married. You might say she had everything she could ask for. And so one day, Jacob had a meeting with his wives, and it was revealed at that point that they're going to have to move. And so probably like all of us do, what happens when you realize you need to move? Well, we start packing, right? And in the same way, I can imagine Rachel and Leah, they are in their tents and they're packing up their belongings, you know, the things that are important to them. And maybe all of a sudden reality set in. That all of a sudden, you know, this place that they grew up in, that they're familiar with, their surroundings, they're going to be leaving all that behind. And now what's going to happen? I'm leaving home, everything that I've known. How can I know that I'm going to be cared for? How can I know that I'm going to be safe? And how can I get along without my father's protection, without his gods? And so maybe after Laban left for work, maybe she snuck in his tent and stole his gods. I don't know what kind of god that she had, but what she did there would soon jeopardize, her actions would soon jeopardize her family and bring about another act of deception. And instead of bringing security, these idols would place her family at risk. Instead of blessing her, they would become a curse. She deceived her husband and endangered her family. Later, when Laban questioned her about the disappearance of his idols, she deceived him again. You know, and you wonder, what was it that she had to have those idols? What did those idols mean to her? And so we start asking questions. Why was she willing to do what she did? And why were they so powerful in her life? In order to answer those questions, let's look a little closer at her life. And in the same way for us, if we have idols, sometimes we need to look a little bit closer. So let's look at Rachel. What kind of lady was Rachel? Okay? In Genesis 29, verse 17, it says, Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. So there you have, Rachel was a very beautiful woman. When I was younger, I heard an expression that was used, you know, man, that lady, she's a knockout. I don't know how many of you have already heard that expression, but usually when you hear that, they're not necessarily talking about inner beauty, right? They're looking at the outside, right? The outside beauty, figure, or whatever. And so Rachel had all of that. It says Leah was tender-eyed, and basically what that means, it means is her eyes were dull. They were not bright, cheerful, if you will. So Leah was, if you want to look at it, she was not in the physical frame that Rachel was. You know, a lot of times it's far easier, you know, if there's lack on the inside, it's a lot easier to pretty up the outside, right? And we all do that. You know, even us as men, we can put a false front up, you know, we can put that smile, whatever it is. We can look pretty good on the outside, but that is not near what is reflected on the inside many times. So Rachel undoubtedly knew that when it came to feminine charms, she had her sister Leah beat hands down. She must have enjoyed the favor that was hers. Rachel learned that she could trust in her own beauty, and her beauty was in fact her justification. It was what she rested in. It's what made her okay in the eyes of others and in her own eyes. It was the source of her power over others and her protection from disappointment. In fact, she was so beautiful that when Jacob laid his eyes on her at first, I mean, it was love at first sight. I mean, he knew immediately that she was the one for him. I don't know how many of you married couples had that love at first sight. But sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. I worked with my wife for about 7 years, I think, before my scales got lifted off of my eyes, if you will. But anyway, Jacob fell in love with her, and he worked for 14 years for Rachel. And Jacob admitted that it just seemed but a small moment in time, just sort of a blip. Time moves fast when you're in love, right? And so Jacob was thoroughly in love with Rachel. And we know all the story of how it went, you know, how that he ended up with Leah first before Rachel. But you would think with Jacob, you know, and Rachel, that was real devotion. And you'd think with a beginning like this, that the rest of Rachel's life would have been a bed of roses, right? She had everything going for her. You know, yeah, Jacob was married to Leah as well, but Rachel was the favored one, right? She's the one that Jacob really had wanted. What could possibly go wrong? And so as time went on, the answer to that question became evident. What more could she possibly want? And that possibly was children. She wanted children. What went through her as she was sitting there, maybe in her tent, and Leah kept having babies, boys, one after the other. And she had like six boys. What happened with Rachel as she was observing all that? And maybe she was watching Jacob go down and play with his boys. And Rachel didn't have anyone. She must have been filled with doubt, anger, and self-pity as she felt her favored position was eroding. The God that she had worshipped, her beauty, was powerless to save her now. She was desperate to obtain the approval and position she thought was her birthright. Her beautiful eyes could now do nothing to fill the emptiness that was in her own body. And so this all boiled over one day in chapter 30. Chapter 30, Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children. Rachel envied her sister. She said unto Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in God's stead? Who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" Rachel's desire for children was so strong that it had twisted her thinking. She began to believe that it was Jacob rather than God who was controlling her fertility, her position, her life. And she felt exposed and worthless. Her barrenness was an ugliness that she couldn't stand to look at. And so here we have coming to the surface. But now, what kind of a God do we have? This woman, the way she was acting, you know, maybe she didn't deserve having children. I don't know. But God, in spite of that, in spite of her unbelief, he gave her a son. Now she's going to be happy and content, right? Let's see what happens. She was temporarily filled with joy at his birth, but she still wasn't content. Her heart was revealed by her naming of him, "May the Lord give me another son." Okay, in verse 24 of chapter 30, it says, "And she called his name Joseph and said, 'The Lord shall add to me another son.'" Okay? Rachel wasn't satisfied with the blessing that God had given her. And that is always the outcome of idolatry. Always the outcome of idolatry is dissatisfaction, right? Idolatry is never satisfied. You know, we think once we have this thing, once we have any one of the things on here, we think if we have any one of those things, we're going to be happy, right? It doesn't work that way. She wanted more. And the interesting thing is, Rachel did get another son. She eventually conceived again. And as she was dying in childbirth, she named his son Benoni, which means son of my sorrow. What she had worshipped and thought would bring her blessing ended up causing her death. Now, isn't this interesting here? What she thought would bring her joy and what she thought would bring her joy brought her sorrow. Isn't it ironic that the woman who cried, "Give me children or else I die," in fact died in childbirth. Her life demonstrates the truth that there is no life in idolatry. All it brings is death. You see, even before Rachel stole her father's idols, she was an idolater. Her desire to have children like her sister Leah was the most important thing in her life. It was something she believed that she had to have, and so it became her God. And she believed that she would justify. Rachel believed in justification by mothering. She thought she had to earn her okayness before God and others and herself. She had never known what it was to be unable to approve of herself, and now she was drowning in shame and sorrows. Because of her infertility and something it represented to her, Rachel had come face to face with an insurmountable problem, something that she may have never experienced before. And so she feared that she had to take steps to protect her position, and she believed her father's gods would somehow bless her, and so she took them. Perhaps she believed that there might be a God who ruled over the earth, but he was too far away and too unmanageable for her comfort. She couldn't trust him to order life as she desired. She needed a tamer, a more docile God that she could believe in, one that she could control. She wanted a God that could give her what she wanted. She wanted a God that she could steal, one she could hide. She wanted a God that she could keep in her purse. And so as we think of Rachel's story, let's look at ourselves. Are there any household gods? Are there any domestic deities in our life that we hold up in very high esteem? What is that one thing in your life that you want so bad that you would say, "Give me this or else I die"? What do we need? What do I have to have in life for it to be meaningful or happiness? What is the thing that I have to have? Any one of those things, without it, I cannot be happy. If I answer that question to anything other than God Himself, then that's what functions as a God for me. You see, idols aren't just stone statues. They're more than that. Idols are loves within us, their desires, their longings, expectations that we worship in place of the true God. There are things that we invest our identity in, and there are things that we trust. Idols cause us to disregard our Heavenly Father in search of what we think we need to have that's going to be meaningful to bring meaning to our life. We have covenantal gods. And what that is gods that we make covenants with. And what that means is, you know, if I do so and so and so and so, then the outcome is going to be this. And what that means is, for example, maybe we want a physically fit, healthy body. And so we think, you know what, if I exercise every day and eat properly, I won't get sick. If that is a God to you, or it could be our work. If having meaningful employment is a God to me, I might think if I'm always first at my job and doing more than is required of me, then my employer will be obligated to notice me and protect my job. And so now I'm not saying and trying to come across it's wrong to exercise, to work diligently, and all those things. Those things are all well and good. But if we bargain, if we think that that is what's going to make me happy, and then we have missed the point of what life is. Those things do not bring happiness. If motivated by God and others, each of these things can be good. And so as we look at each of those things in context can be good, right? But these actions become sinful when we do them primarily out of sinful fear to earn merit or to manipulate outcomes rather than freely out of a heart of gratitude for God. The only holy reason for doing any good is to the love of the Lord and our neighbor. And again, how do I know whether I'm worshiping any of those things? If we're willing to sin to obtain our goal, or sin if we don't get what we want, then that would be a good indication that we have an idol in our life. She had brought an example of a woman one time who made a nice dinner for her husband. And just imagine yourself, ladies and men even the same way, she made a nice dinner for her husband, hoping that she would get compliments and all those things. He just ate his dinner, and after supper he went in front of the television, watched television, and then he went to bed. And what did she do? She became angry and she cried, pouted, and looked for ways to punish him. Okay? When you do things with certain expectations to get something in return, and then those things don't happen, what do you do at that point? Do we pout and get, you know, whatever? If that is the case, then probably we were motivated out of fear or some other thing was the reason that we did it, because we had expectations of wanting something in return. And so if the end result isn't what we're looking for, and then we get angry and do all those things, then probably we did not have the right motivation to begin with, if that makes sense. And that is when you make covenants with gods and things like that. It's when those things aren't accomplished, then we sort of lose it, if you will. Okay, time is moving on. One thing that we need to do is, I'm going to have to skip over some of this, but ultimately we read how that Jacob hid those idols under a tree, or hid idols. You know, he told everyone to bring your idols. I don't know. I would trust and hope that perhaps Rachel brought those idols as well. And I think probably what Jacob did is he buried them under a tree. And Jacob charged his family to return to God. Put away the foreign gods which are among you, he told his family. And so they gave Jacob all the foreign gods which they had, and Jacob hid them under the oak which was near Shechem. We hope that Rachel surrendered her false gods at her husband's command. And so as we look at that cow this morning, we also need to bring our idols and surrender them under the tree. By his power, he can bury all our false gods under the most awesome and glorious tree ever, the one on Golgotha's Mount. We can trust him with all our fears, all our desires, all our sins, because he is the one who said, "It is finished." And so Rachel's story is relevant to us, is because idolatry didn't end with her. You know, idolatry has continued on down through the ages, and even today, We struggle with it. You know, 1 John 5:21, again, little children, guard yourselves from idols. And so God calls us to bury our false gods at the cross. It is in union with Jesus Christ, the one who hung on Golgotha's tree, that we have the desire and power to conquer all of our idolatry and bury all our gods in the blood-soaked ground beneath the cross. God sees everything. And so whatever our struggle is this morning, whatever, as you look within yourself, look within the cow, if you will. Don't necessarily just look at the surface, but look at the inwardly and look at the things that are motivating you this morning. Whatever that is, make sure that God is the motivator behind that. And I trust that for each one of us. This time, let's come before God in prayer.